He walked over to Susanna's scarred chair. It had rolled hundreds of miles since they'd found it in Topeka, but its rolling days were done, and looked down at it moodily. When Callahan approached him, Eddie waved the pair back. Jake was looking at the place on the road where Benny had been struck and killed. The boy's body was gone, of course, and someone had covered his spilled blood with a fresh layer of the agon, but Jake found he could see the dark splotches anyway, and Benny's severed arm lying palm up. Jake remembered how his friend's da had staggered out of the corn and seen his son lying there. For 5 seconds or so, he had been capable of no sound whatever. And Jake supposed that was time enough for someone to have told Cy Sleitman they'd gotten off incredibly light. One dead boy, one dead rancher's wife, another boy with a broken ankle. Piece of cake, really. But no one had. And then, Sleitman the elder had shrieked. Jake thought he would never forget the sound of that shriek. Just as he would always see Benny lying here in the dark and bloody dirt, with his arm off. Beside the place where Benny had fallen was something else which had been covered with dirt. Jake could see just a small wink of metal. He dropped to one knee and excavated one of the wolves' death balls, things called sneeches. The Harry Potter model, according to what was written on them. Yesterday he'd held a couple of these in his hand and felt them vibrating, heard their faint, malevolent hum. This one was as dead as a rock. Jake stood up and threw it toward the heap of corn-covered dead wolves, threw hard enough to make his arm hurt. That arm would probably be stiff tomorrow, but he didn't care much about Henchick's low opinion of anger either. Eddie wanted his wife back, Jake wanted his friend. And while Eddie might get what he wanted somewhere down the line, Jake Chambers never would. Because dead was the gift that kept on giving. Dead, like diamonds, was forever. He wanted to get going, wanted this part of the East Road looking at his back. He also wanted not to have to look at Susanna's empty, beat-up chair any longer, but the Manny had formed a ring around the spot where the battle had actually taken place, and Henchick was praying in a high, rapid voice that hurt Jake's ears. It sounded quite a lot like the squeal of a frightened pig. He spoke to something called the Over, asking for safe passage to yon cave and success of endeavor with no loss of life or sanity. Jake found this part of Henchick's prayer especially disturbing, as he'd never thought of sanity as a thing to be prayed for. The boss man also begged the Over to enliven their mags and bobs. And finally he prayed for Caven. The persistence of magic, a phrase that seemed to have a special power for these people. When he was finished, they all said, "Over Sam, over Kra, over Kanta," in unison, and dropped their linked hands. A few went down on their knees to have a little extra palaver with the really big boss. Cantab, meanwhile, led 4 or 5 of the younger men to the fly. They folded back its snowy white top, revealing a number of large wooden boxes. Plumb bobs and magnets, Jake guessed, and a lot bigger than the ones they wore around their necks. They'd brought out the heavy artillery for this little adventure. The boxes were covered with designs, stars and moons and odd geometric shapes that looked Kabbalistic rather than Christian. But Jake realized he had no basis for believing the Manny were Christians. They might look like Quakers or Amish with their cloaks and beards and round, crowned black hats, might throw the occasional thee or thou into their conversation. But so far as Jake knew, neither the Quakers nor the Amish had ever made a hobby of traveling to other worlds. Long, polished wooden rods were pulled from another wagon. They were thrust through metal sleeves on the undersides of the engraved boxes. The boxes were called coffs, Jake learned. The Manny carried them like religious artifacts through the streets of a medieval town. Jake supposed that in a way they were religious artifacts. They started up the path, which was still scattered with hair ribbons, scraps of cloth, and a few small toys. These had been bait for the wolves, and the bait had been taken. When they reached the place where Frank Tavery had gotten his foot caught, Jake heard the voice of the useless Git's beautiful sister in his mind. "Help him, please, Cy, I beg." He had. God forgive him. And Benny had died. Jake looked away, grimacing, then thought, "You're a gunslinger now. You gotta do better."